You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
We are gathered here as advisors, as scientists.
The kind of place you expect a ghost to like to wander.
Hey, we all know that we're going to die, baby.
I'll help you. I'm something of a witch.
Welcome to Mission Spooky. I'm your fantastic host, JC, and with me today is the queen of everything. Is that what you call yourself? You gave yourself that title. You're really not the queen of... Anyway, it's Kiki. But she's not really the queen of anything. But, like, apparently she's the queen of everything. Self-proclaimed queen of everything.
On our Discord channel that is now open to the public, yes, I am the queen of everything. Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Self-proclaimed, wise. Yes. Yeah, whatever. Somebody's got to keep you people in line.
You people? Is that racist?
No.
Oh, okay, cool. So how have you been, Kiki?
Well, I really want to do a whole episode for Pot of Holding on Boobgate.
I don't know what that means, but okay.
Really? Interesting, because it has to do with The Mandalorian.
Okay. Was there a boob in Mandalorian?
Well, there were two sets of boobs, and apparently people got, I will say one woman in particular got angry and decided to make fun of it, and then the rest of us women who aren't stupid jumped down her throat and were like, it's okay, man.
Boobs.
The two female Mandalorians who have boob shaped armor.
Oh
yes. So I had to go on a tirade about how, you know, as a fencer I wore boob armor.
But you understand fencing and lasers are different, right?
I do.
Okay.
But I also just wanted to point out to the many people who said that boob armor is stupid that no, it's not. And sometimes if you are large chested like I am, you need it. You're flat chested and you can fit your little pancake titties inside of plate armor made for a man, then congratulations. I cannot. I need to have it shaped out.
I'm not getting into this argument. It does not concern me. I didn't even realize that they had armor shaped like boobs.
Her Mandalorian armor is exactly like it was in Rebels, so fuck it.
We need to put some spoilers on this. Spoiler warning. Because
no, I'm gonna cut this whole thing out.
The name. You just said the name of and not everyone knows.
Episode's been out. We'll have been out for over a week by the time
Look,
this airs.
We still gotta give spoiler warnings.
Oh, fuck. I'll take it out.
Better just put spoiler warning right before. Spoiler warning! Spoiler warning! Spoiler warning! Use that. And now's where Kiki forgets that we need to be polite to listeners that may have busy lives and haven't watched all of Mandalorian like we do. Did I tell you, episode one of Mando, I woke up at 6 in the fucking morning to watch it before
work. Well, I am officially caught up now.
Yeah, me too.
Watched all three episodes back to back so I could get caught up. But yeah, I'm loving it. I think it's great. I have no complaints about it. I think it's really interesting. Yeah, can't wait for more. And
nice. Yeah, I'm excited for Friday.
No spoilers. There's a couple of scenes with Baby Yoda that I laughed heartily. One mm-hmm. involved a tiny octopus, which was very funny to me.
Yes.
Right? Yes. The other one involved him eating things that he should not have been eating.
Yeah, he should not have been eating those things. Unless maybe he should have. We don't know. I'm sure Baby Yoda has his reasons.
Oh, perfect segue. Speaking of eating.
Oh, I do enjoy eating. Oh, are we going to talk about how I just had mac and cheese and fried chicken for dinner? Because I'm an adult and there was nothing green on my plate. Because I'm an adult.
After the very heavy last episode, as far as like murder, ghostly goings on, I decided we should talk about all the weird ass food that we eat here in the state because it is going to be the week of Thanksgiving.
It is the week of Thanksgiving at your own house, socially distanced.
And I thought also it'd be interesting because I tried to go through the list and pick things that, generally speaking, might not appear anywhere else in the country. So we're not going to be talking about Philly cheesesteaks on this episode.
We're not? Nah, but Philly cheesesteaks are so wonderful.
They are wonderful, but everybody has access to them. Everybody knows about them. It's like it's our thing. Like it's one of everybody knows Philly cheesesteak. And we're not going to argue about who has the best one. We all know that it's Pat's.
Is that the blue one?
Yes, Pat's is the blue one. So I'm going to start an Instagram after the show airs. And then you guys can discuss with us if any of these foods did sound familiar to you guys, if you'd known them already, if you have a version of them where you live, and if you're from the area, what your favorite recipe is, for example. I want to know.
Foods are delicious. Foods are some of my favorite things.
So we're going to break for our promo this week, which is Plant Thropology. And that is a podcast that I'm just getting into right now because I'm kind of a horticultural nut. There's two episodes on archaeobotany that I have queued up right now, as a matter of fact. And when we get back, we're going to celebrate the strange foods of Pennsylvania.
Do you love plants? Don't be silly. Of course you do. You might just not know it yet. I'm Vikram Baliga, the host of the Plantthropology Podcast, the show where we dive into the lives and careers of some really cool plant people. Join me each episode as I chat with students, scientists, and professionals in the natural sciences and figure out what keeps them coming back for more. We'll explore their work, the ways they got into their fields, why they love plants and nature so much, and why you should love those things too. Plantthropology is laid back and conversational and will keep you laughing and engaged whether you're a scientist or not. Follow along for this adventure into the sciences and keep being really cool plant people.
Welcome back.
So I decided we were going to do Western Pennsylvania to Eastern Pennsylvania.
Okay.
That way we're ending on things that both you and I know for a fact, like we know these things.
Okay.
I'm very curious if you ever heard of these first three things, because I'm not 100% sold on the first one. So we're starting in Western Pennsylvania. This is going to be Pittsburgh area. The Pittsburgh cookie table. And this is a massive table of cookies that no Pittsburgh wedding should be without, apparently.
Oh, yeah. I was at a wedding when I went down to Florida. It was for a wedding and they had a cookie table. It was huge. Well, I mean, they're from Pittsburgh.
Oh,
like they're from the area. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. I want to make
sure. I
don't
know people from Florida. Like, I know people who live in Florida.
Okay. So the legend is during the Great Depression, when folks couldn't afford a cake, family members would bake cookies to serve instead. And then it just became such a lovely tradition that it just sort of stayed. And let me tell you, I've seen some pictures of these cookie tables and I'm like, holy crap. Just want to put my face all up in there.
Yeah.
So that's cool. So you've actually seen one of these. That's neat.
Seen and gorged myself from. Yes.
Alrighty. Number two, putting fries and coleslaw on a sandwich.
Take it home. That shouldn't be a thing. Whatever dark magics brought that to this world, get the fuck out. Actually, like if it's like homemade coleslaw, you know what? Fuck me up. I'm in. But if it's like diner coleslaw, I'm out so fast. It's not even funny.
Okay. So this was sort of funny. Read a couple articles about this. One was in, I think, Savoir magazine, which turned out to be a load of hokum. I'm not going to name any names. This person wrote this whole article about how supposedly the sandwich was concocted for coal miners, that they needed something quick and easy to grab. And so the Premonti brothers started this fad in the 1930s to satisfy the hungry coal miners. It turns out that, well, the Premonti brothers absolutely did start the sandwich in the 1930s, and it has been copied since then. Of course, nothing is ever as good as the original, but it was actually developed to feed truckers who transported supplies from the Strip District in Pittsburgh. Now, the Strip District is where all the mills and the factories were, including Westinghouse and Heinz. And Heinz ketchup. These guys worked 11 p.m. to 11 a.m. So this sandwich had everything on it. All your sides between two slices of fresh bread and also your meat, your main. So they'd smoosh it all together, wrap it up, cut it in half, and boom, there you go. Meat, coleslaw, fries. Done.
I mean, okay.
Right? Now seeing the sandwich, I'm like, that is a mouthful. That is also what she said. So far so good. We're, you know, not anything too crazy here. But now I'm going to ask you, Mr. Pierogi Aficionado.
I mean, if by aficionado you mean person who gorges themselves on pierogies, then yes, sure. But if you have any other meaning to that, then no. But okay, what's your question?
Have you ever heard of Lekvar pierogies?
No, I'm going to go with a no.
Oh yeah, so me neither. They are prune butter filled pierogies. Prune butter.
Prune butter.
Filled pierogies. And then you heat them up, you fry them just like regular pierogies. And they're served as a dessert. So they're served hot with vanilla ice cream on top of them. So not a dinner side pierogi, an actual dessert pierogi. Interesting. I'm down.
Yeah, that does sound good.
I think the prune butter, because it's a little bit less sweet, served with the vanilla ice cream, kind of like cuts it, you know? Mm-hmm. That's a tremendous amount of carbohydrates for me, though.
Yeah, I'm in. I mean, I'll eat it.
Too bad we're not doing Enchanted Eats anymore.
I know. I regret that segment went away every day. I'm just like, we should just rename Mission Spooky to Enchanted Eats and you make food for me to eat and somehow ship it up here.
I was just going to say, it turned out to be a good decision just because COVID. We would have had like 3 months of it and then I would have been like, fuck, how am I going to get the food to JC?
You would have figured it out.
I would have left it on my doorstep and then you could just pick it up and then take it with you. That's what I got for Pittsburgh. Everything else on the list was stuff that I've seen somewhere else. Those are the three most intriguing things. So Central PA. Central PA has got a lot of weird shit. So I'm going to start out with the good stuff. Tea berry ice cream.
Oh, I do like tea berry ice cream.
Fuck yes. So Inside Scoop down in Coopersburg has some of the best homemade tea berry ice cream that I have personally ever had. Now, the funny thing is it does not taste like tea or berries.
No.
So for those of you who have no idea what tea berry is, now some people might know this from tea berry chewing gum made famous by the Clark Company. And that chewing gum was, even when I was a kid in the 80s, chewing gum was still pretty big-ish, but it sort of like hit its peak in the 1960s. So if you don't know what tea berry is, the scientific name is Gaultheria procumbens, and it is an evergreen shrub, and the berries are bright pink in color with a minty taste. So while the taste is kind of somewhere between spearmint and peppermint, the tea berry itself is not in the mint family at all. And it's a very original flavor. It's got like a fresh tasting flavor to it if it's real. It's a real extract. The lab produced flavor some of you guys out west might get if you've ever had tea berry ice cream, it kind of winds up tasting like Bengay, which is gross. But if you have real tea berry extract, you can use it to flavor tea, medicine, and like I said, candy. And of course, it's bright pink in color, so it's almost like Pepto-Bismol ice cream. But damn, that shit is good. I'm glad you like tea berry ice cream because Doug had some and he was telling me that he thought it tasted weird, like it wasn't.
It's kind of an acquired taste.
But he thinks he might have had some that was not like a knockoff, that it was lab produced and not real. When I said it might taste like, does it taste like Bengay, like a wintergreen? He's like, yeah. And it was like off. I'm like, yeah, you probably didn't have the real deal. So you can grow tea berry. It's the plant itself is native to our area, which is why this is only found in like PA, New Jersey, parts of Maryland, I think, but then up into the Northeast, like Maine, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, all that. And it's in Canada as well. So some of our Canadian listeners up there, you probably have had tea berry at some point. Let's move on to one of my personal favorite processed meats, Lebanon bologna.
That's a good one.
Right?
I didn't know that was like a PA thing.
It is.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Unless you get it imported from here. So it turns out Lebanon bologna was actually created in the 19th century. It's smoked and fermented cured meat that originated in the predominantly PA Dutch community of Lebanon County. And it has a very similar texture and appearance to salami, but it's darker and has a reddish pink color. My personal favorite is Seltzer's Lebanon bologna. I actually did not know this before this episode when I was researching about Seltzer's. I personally think they're the best. It turns out they're the OG Lebanon bologna. The recipe is the original from the 19th century, and the way that they produce it is the traditional way that it was made back then, which is probably why folks might prefer it. It's spicy, sweet flavor. It's like a sweet bologna. It's so fucking good. And like I said, Seltzer's is the original and largest producer of Lebanon bologna in the United States. So there's a chance that some of you may have had that, but I'm not really sure how far they send it out. Obviously, you've had that because you just said,
yeah. Yeah. Like, it's delightful.
So when I was a kid, it used to be Lebanon bologna and like a piece of provolone cheese, and then you just rolled it up.
Oh, yeah. Roller coasters. That's what I called those motherfuckers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mom would put like 5 or 6 of those in the bag and like send you to school with that. That was your lunch.
Yeah.
Fuck the bread.
Bread is for rich people. Okay. That's all I'm saying. Ain't nobody got money for bread.
Okay. This one's kind of funny because I had to have a long discussion with Doug about this. Apple butter with cottage cheese.
Okay.
Have you ever had those two things together?
Apple butter with cottage cheese. I'm going to say no because I avoid cottage cheese.
I can understand that. So turns out, because I asked my husband, I was like, have you ever had apple butter with cottage cheese? Is this truly a Pennsylvania Dutch thing? Or, you know, because he's also traveled as much as I have. So he's like, have you ever had it anywhere else? Because I couldn't remember ever eating it anywhere else. And he was like, you know, no. First of all, South has apple butter. And the South has cottage cheese. We do not put those two things together. And then he went on a rant about how that was devil's work and disgusting. And why would anyone want to do that to themselves? I was like, don't mock what you have not tried.
Yeah.
You do know what apple butter is, right? I mean,
yeah, I've had apple butter before. Right. And I avoid cottage cheese.
I gotcha. No, it's a really acquired thing. And I honestly only eat cottage cheese with apple butter. That's the only time I ever eat it. I can't. So I will tell you this, though, guys. If you don't know what apple butter is, because I do know that we also have lots of listeners from overseas as well.
Is it butter from apples?
No, but you make butter from apples. Essentially, it's another one of these American things that's like extremely sweet. The usual threesome of the threesome of apples is, I'm gonna try my like sexy voice, okay? Granny Smith, Fuji, and Honeycrisp. And then you have brown sugar, cinnamon, nutmeg, and clove, which is very similar to pumpkin spice trio. You slow cook that crap, and you can use slow cookers now. Puree it, put it in jars. You can keep it up for 2 weeks in the fridge, or you can freeze it. And it's usually an autumn time spread over toast. So it's a little bit on the sweet side, yeah. But if you just put it on toast, like it cuts the sweetness down tremendously. Yeah, baby. I want to make some damn apple butter.
Apple butter is delightful.
And then they make pumpkin butter now too. So
I feel sorry for people who haven't had apple butter.
I know. Next one. Again, not a scary food. It's Foschnots.
Foschnots?
Hell yeah.
That's another one I've had. You know, this is one topic I feel like I could have done, like I've done research on.
You've done the eating research on it. Hell yes. I wish
you would have told me more about it because I would have done more research right before the show.
You're like, this Lebanon bologna is amazing.
Delightful. Mm-mm.
All right. So again, for those of you who don't know what a foschnot is, it's a donut. It's a very particular kind of donut that is served on Shrove Tuesday, which is also known as Fat Tuesday or Mardi Gras, the day before Ash Wednesday and the time right before Lent when you're going to start giving stuff up. So the idea was always, at least when I was in Catholic school, you feasted on Fat Tuesday. And Mardi Gras, and then there was Ash Wednesday, and then there was nothing. It was the lean times when you had to give up chocolate or something else that you really liked to do.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad I'm never Catholic.
Yeah, you should be.
I am.
The original idea, though, behind this particular type of donut is that Pennsylvania Dutch housewives would use up all the last of their butter, lard, and sugar right before Lent, because you want to get rid of all the rich stuff that you're kind of giving up.
Yeah, you can't have it laying around the house in your face when you're not allowed to eat it. That's just like, right. You know, not a good idea.
This is also a very particular variety of donut because it is made with yeast or baking soda as opposed to a cake donut. So these are very fluffy. And what was really interesting is that this is one North Carolina connection that I'll be going over. When I moved to North Carolina, the closest thing that I found to a foschnot was a Krispy Kreme donut. It turns out that is because the founder, Vernon Rudolph, used a recipe for yeast-raised donuts that he got from a French federal employee and chef named Joe LaBrea. So that is why Krispy Kreme donuts are very similar to Fushnuts.
Okay.
So in the South, if you, you know, Krispy Kreme's huge in the South, you're basically eating a Fushnut. And what's cool is as Krispy Kreme has moved up here, they've actually done Fushnut Day. We get a free donut. Now we're going to move on to like the gross thing that I've never eaten. And I won't. Sorry. I can't do it. It's called a hog maw.
Ooh.
Have you heard of hog maw?
I feel like I know enough Dutch to know what it is, but I still want to hear you say what it is.
It's a pig's stomach.
Mm.
That is stuffed with sausage, cabbage,
fuck
and
me.
Potatoes.
Oh, that sounds disgusting.
Mm. And then baked. I just don't. Yeah, I don't know. There's certain kinds of offal that I'll eat, and then there's other kinds of offal that I won't eat. And I know it's stupid because honestly, a pig's stomach is very similar to a sausage casing because that's intestine and I eat sausage. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because you can't get past like the stomach part of it in my head. I'm like, I'm sure it tastes great. Sausage, cabbage, potatoes. You can't go wrong.
I mean, you can when you put in a pig's stomach, but you know, other people eat it. I would at least give it a go. I would at least give it a go. I can honestly say that because, you know, you only live once.
So there we go. That's the one from Central PA that one of us needs to eat.
Yep. And it's going to be me. We both know.
You go for it. Okay. We're on to our neck of the woods, Eastern Pennsylvania. So Lehigh Valley, Bucks County, Philadelphia, kind of went Lancaster. Lancaster's in there. Do you want to start with meats or do you want to start off with treats?
You know what? Let's start with some meat. I love good old-fashioned meat in my mouth.
That's a sound bite right there.
I know, right? That's why I said it. I'm like, this is going to be taken. It took you a second to realize what I said, too, which I think is the saddest part.
It is. I know. I'm tired today.
That's okay.
Okay. So alongside Lebanon bologna, we have another wonderful meat, and that is called pork roll.
Ooh, I like me some pork roll.
Hell yeah.
Wawa has the pork roll sandwiches. Fuck me up.
It's sometimes called Taylor ham because John Taylor, not from Duran Duran, was the name of the man who invented pork roll. And it actually, you're going to hate this part, but it originated in New Jersey. However, it quickly came over here to Pennsylvania and we can't get enough of the stuff. So it's sort of like regular bologna, but it's cut really thick. Fry it up. So something that we have here that is often referred to as a Jersey breakfast is a breakfast sandwich that's made with fried pork roll and eggs and cheese and then slapped together. And I suggest putting that on a bagel because fuck yeah, that's why.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting horny. I mean, hungry thinking about it.
This is like, I should just start doing food porn. It's a whole other podcast. I will cut away from meat for a second. We're going to go to one of our treats here, which is called a Moravian sugar cake. And this is our other Pennsylvania, North Carolina connection, because the Moravians, who are from here in Bethlehem, they moved down to Old Salem, North Carolina. So if you're in North Carolina and you're listening, you will know exactly what Moravian sugar cake is because you've probably had it if you visited Salem, or it's distributed from Old Salem because they make it there in the same way that we make it here in this region. And the interesting thing for me is that this is made with a potato dough. It has yeast in it, right? So, and then it rises up and you have to put your thumbprints in it after it rises. So it has like these little thumbprints or fingerprints all through it. It has to be studded with these things, right? Because then you're going to pack that with butter and brown sugar. And when you bake it, all that butter and sugar just goes right into the little wells that you've created and spreads out evenly. And then you can put a little bit of cinnamon on top of it. And it actually forms this sugar crust that goes really deep into the cake. It's crazy good. And basically, it's a slice of diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, who cares? You're only going to live once, you know?
That is true.
Don't eat an entire sugar cake by yourself because it's literally potatoes, yeast, sugar, butter, and cinnamon. Like, that's it. And it's brown sugar, too. So it's got a little bit of molasses flavor to it. So
that does sound good. I don't think I've actually had one of them.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my god. The farmer's market.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to fucking change this.
You have to. Okay, so the farmer's market in Quakertown used to have it at a bakery there, but I noticed that since it changed hands like a few years ago, it's not the same. So I think your best bet is probably the Allentown Farmer's Market. Check it out. Pretty sure they're going to have the better variety. Unless, you know, I could try my hand at it. It's honestly one of those cakes that I have not made myself, but I want to. So, hey, if we're on lockdown again.
Which is coming.
Coming.
It's going to happen. And unfortunately, while I have another new job, I'm still like an essential worker, and I'll never have off, and I always have to, you know, put myself at risk for no fucking reason.
Okay, hold on. Let me try to raise your spirits here, okay? With another meat.
Yes, I do like meat. Meat makes me happy.
Another meat product. Well, that had potatoes in it. That cake had potatoes. I was trying to keep your spirits up there. Sorry, buddy. Okay, Scrapple.
Scrapple is not for me.
Oh, what?
Yeah, I'll eat it if like somebody makes it, okay? Like, I'm not rude. If I'm at somebody's house and they make Scrapple, yeah, I'll eat it. But like, I'm never gonna request Scrapple. I know what Scrapple is. I don't want it. Like, necessarily, I'd rather have bacon or ham.
I just completely forget what Scrapple is. And then I eat it. I don't care. But I will tell the rest of the world this, that it is called Scrapple for a reason, because it literally is the scraps of pork product.
Yeah.
Okay. So back in the day, way back in the day, when it was first created, you had your rural, I always love this, rural immigrants, but we all know who. That's like the Pennsylvania Dutch, okay? Or Germans. They didn't let anything go to waste, right? Good, which is great. So your traditional pork scraps used to be head, brains, heart, liver, and skin. And then other trimmings off of like fat, bone trimmings, etc. And all of this would be boiled with the actual bones and the marrow for some added flavor. It was then simmered with cornmeal, wheat flour, or sometimes buckwheat. And then you had flour, onions, and lots of spices, mostly sage and thyme, all slurried together. It's formed into these loaf pans. So when we get it, it's still in that loaf form even today. And then you cut it pretty thin and then you slap it on, pan fry it, and serve it for breakfast. And it's very interesting because a lot of times the traditional way is like you have your scrapple, your pancakes. Scrapple's best if you put maple syrup on it or honey.
Yep, it is.
And a side of apple butter sometimes. Let's just add it all in there because it's true. This is how they eat it. I also want to point out that November 9th is just National Scrapple Day. So nationally, people now know what Scrapple is, but it was definitely from Pennsylvania. And they do not make it with all of those scraps anymore. Everything obviously has to adhere to FDA approved animal anatomy now. So it's not quite as bad as you would think that it is. And Frederick's Meats in Quakertown, sponsor us. They make the best scrapple. One of my family members used to work there, so I do know like it's all good stuff. It's all homemade, and because it takes so long to make it and it's so hot, they only make it during the fall and the winter. You cannot get scrapple in the spring or summer because it's just too hot to make it. It's like boiling vats that it has to be in. It's just too hot. Anyway, yay, scrapple. Anyway, about hot dogs, you know, I just don't think about it. I just think about how fucking tasty it is. And I shove it in my face.
Yeah. I wish I could be that way, but I'm not. I need, like I said, I'll eat it. If somebody makes it for me, I will 100% eat it. I just won't personally order it because, well, it's not necessarily for me.
I have found a meat that you're not into.
I mean, I do like pig, just not those right. parts of pig.
Like not this particular formation of processed meat in a
loaf. Yeah.
So we got three more.
Okay.
Two of my favorites. And one of these, which I'm going to talk about right now, I never actually heard of. And it's definitely from Lancaster County. It's a Mennonite and Amish tradition. It's called cup cheese.
Cup cheese.
Cup cheese, C-U-P cheese, because it's literally served in a cup.
Don't believe I've ever encountered that.
My German is not really that good. There is a variation of this cheese, and I think it's Kochkäse. It's a specialty food product. obviously labeled as cup cheese because it's sold in the cup. So there's that. Like, there is a German tradition for this. And I just said Mennonites, Amish, Pennsylvania Dutch. It's a spreadable cheese. I've seen pictures of this. I'm like, oh, this looks very interesting. So it's really soft, is a little bit sour, has kind of an odor like Limburger, apparently. And a lot of times it's processed at home. So it's more of like a home cooked type thing. And it's made with American cheese or cottage cheese, butter, cream, salt, baking soda, water, and raw milk. And stored in a pot or a cup kept in the refrigerator, which is how it got its name again. So it's kind of more of a homemade specialty, but you can get it at farmers markets in Lancaster County. And sometimes sold at like little Amish or Mennonite stands. If they're selling things directly from their farm, they'll have it.
Cup of tea. I'll have to, next time I go to my Amish place that I like going to.
Yeah.
I'll have to see if they have it and I'll try it.
I mean, it's cheese, so.
Yeah,
I'm not opposed. I like the cheese.
I do like cheese.
All right, we're going to move on to the best, I'm sorry, in my humble opinion, the best pie that there is on the planet. Do you know what pie I'm going to say?
Is it a shoe fly pie?
It is shoe fly pie.
Mm-hmm.
This is why you're my host.
I sure am.
Because I don't tell you anything about what we're going to talk about, and then you just fucking know it.
Yeah.
What can I say about
shoe fly pie, it's delightful.
So how do you think it got its name?
Because it's so sweet, it draws in flies, and you got to shoo flies away.
That is one of the prevailing theories of why this pie was named shoe fly pie.
It's fat. Because I said so.
But it's wrong.
Oh, well, that's upsetting. It's honestly okay. I blame Obama.
God. Yes. Let me tell you about shoe fly pie. It had its beginnings as something called the Jenny Lind cake, which is very similar to gingerbread cake. If anybody's had shoe fly pie, you'll be like, oh, yeah, I can understand that because there's that little layer in there that has sort of that gingerbready type feel to it, right? So it's derived from that, but it was originally served as a crustless molasses-based cake called the Centennial Cake in 1876. And that's because it was served to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And then sometime in the 1880s, though, home bakers started adding a crust to it because then it would be easier to eat it with a cup of coffee. You didn't need a plate and utensils then, as long as it had a crust. Because, you know, I don't know if you ever just sliced yourself some pie. As long as it's got a crust on it, you can hold that shit in your hands and like shove it in your face, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So there's a couple other theories, too, that I thought were interesting to back up the fact that it started off as the Centennial Cake and then kind of became something more, especially adding the crust to it. Mostly a great cold weather cake because it doesn't contain any eggs. The chickens aren't laying eggs in the wintertime. Why is it called shoe fly pie? Well, JC just told you guys the prevailing theory was always that it has so much sugar in it, and the molasses actually is a runoff from sugar anyway, so it's got even more sugar in it, that pies would be left out on the windowsill to cool, and you'd have to shoo all the flies away from them because they were so attracted to the sugary, sugary pie.
That's basically the fact, but that's what happened.
And then there's also a minstrel song from the 1860s called Shoo Fly, Don't Bother Me, which some of you may know because Disney had that song on one of their albums for kids, and Bing Crosby also brought it back. That's a really, that whole song is like really super interesting. It was actually created by an African Caribbean woman and then went on to be like this huge hit even on into like the 60s. And we're talking like 1860s to the 1960s. That's pretty cool. So this particular story I was able to find out from this great book. It's called Dutch Treats, Heirloom Recipes from Farmhouse Kitchens, and that's by William Wise Weaver. Wow. WWW. It turns out that the pie takes its name from a popular area attraction in the 1800s known as Shoe Fly the Boxing Mule. Yes. Boxing Mule. Now, it's kind of funny because the mule took his name from the song that I just told you guys about. This mule becomes so popular in this area that he winds up having a line of products named after him. So there was Shoe Fly Flour, Shoe Fly Horse Powder, shoe fly molasses, and of course, shoe fly pie. There you go.
I mean, I guess that makes sense, but at the same time, and hear me out, I don't like it.
I thought that a boxing mule was so much cooler. And also, doesn't it just fit this area? I mean, currently Philadelphia has Gritty, right? I feel like Gritty is sort of the next incarnation of Shoe Fly, the boxing mule. You know, everybody loves Gritty.
Everybody does currently love Gritty, except for one person.
And that person is not going to be named.
No. There can only be one Orange King. And Gritty is the king.
I love all of the memes coming out of Philadelphia. I just do. Still, it's just great. Yeah, I just love it. I'm so happy that we live in such a funny area.
Yeah.
Oh, we're such delightful people. Oh, man. Okay, I saved the best one for last.
Okay, I'm excited.
I just want to preface this by saying that my beloved grandfather, who fought in World War II and was a belly gunner, made it out alive somehow. He would tell us kids, now keep in mind that we are maybe like 9 years old to like, let's say probably at the youngest, probably between 5 and 12 years old. And he would be so excited. He'd tell us kids, he's like, I'm cooking dinner tonight, kids. Guess what Pop-Up's making? Shit on a shingle.
Ah, some SOS. I could go for some SOS right about now.
Thank you for knowing what the hell I'm talking about.
Fucking shit on shingles, good shit. You know, it's good shit.
And I am so, I feel bad for all those little kids that didn't have Pop-Ups who made shit on a shingle for them, because it was the only time that we could ever laugh at, like, because, you know, mom is always like, don't call it that because they're little. And we're like, no, it's funny. Just let him alone. I love my grandpa.
Let Papa be Papa.
Exactly. This is also the same Pop-Up who looked me dead in the eye one day and said, kid, don't marry a woman.
Well, to be fair, you can honestly say you took that advice.
I did. Now, let me also say that that was not homophobic in any way. That was literally right after he had a huge fight with my grandmother, who could be a total biatch. It was just so funny. I will never forget that. It was hysterical. I sort of laughed and said, don't worry, Pop-Up, I won't. Oh, because I think I was all of like 8 years old. Okay, so other life lessons from Pop-Up. Shit on a shingle. Guys, this recipe looks like it probably was first printed as such in the Manual for Army Cooks. And it was listed as stewed chip beef. And it featured 15 pounds of beef to feed 60 men. So the non-dirty way to describe this is that it's cream chip beef, and you can have it for breakfast or dinner, honestly.
Usually I have SOS for dinner.
Right, me too. And it was just served on a piece of bread. Just toast your bread, boom, yeah. Put your shit on top of it, shit on a shingle, done. Cream chip beef is a dried, salt pressed, and really thinly sliced beef. And apparently, and it makes a lot of sense, salt dried, so it's transportable. Right? It's not going to go bad. So you had it on long haul journeys, packed with protein. So American soldiers loved it. European immigrants to this area thought it was great because it was economical and transportable, and it was meat. So eventually, cream chip beef itself gets transported all over the mid-Atlantic U.S. And particularly, though, in Pennsylvania. We really loved it. Still do.
We sure do.
It's on diner menus, but just not as shit on a shingle. Although I dare a diner to just put SOS on there because that's funny. And everyone
knows
what it is.
Yeah, that's usually what they do, I think.
And then at one point, it actually made it onto IHOP and Cracker Barrel menus. So
Cracker Barrel, I can understand. IHOP, I'm surprised about.
Yeah. Cream chip beef, guys. Wow. Okay. So I'm very curious if anybody has had any of these things, if they enjoyed them, or if you didn't, I don't care. Tell us. And that's all I got for Thanksgiving craziness. This is going to be a peculiar Pennsylvania episode.
I like it.
Because it is weird. It's just weird stuff most people don't know about or are turned off by. they don't live here. They're like, what the fuck is that? All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed listening to food today. Something a little bit different, but not really. Because, I mean, let's face it. We've talked about haunted restaurants at length before.
And we'll do it again. God damn it.
Fuck yeah. So today's musical guest is Hauntress. Oh, I plugged these guys before. They are a Philadelphia band. Love them to death. They are kind of like alternative rock, goth rock, goth metal, whatever you want to call it. And this song is called The Task at Hand. All of their songs are available on Bandcamp. Please go check them out. When we get back, we'll do Spooky Squad news and any shout outs we may have.
They heard us talking, said we're perverted, but we want the same thing that everyone does. We couldn't stop it, that same old fervor.
You're getting good at this now.
I like giving a little bit of a pause, you know. Yeah. I like there being like, okay, let's breathe, you and I can readjust, deep breaths, you know. That's what I do. Yeah. I take a deep breath,
go deeper and deeper.
Oh no no, Henry, no. You know what I've done over last, I don't know, since we last aired an episode, I guess
week.
Yeah, sure. Whatever that time span is, I was able to sit down and watch this new Amazon show called Truth Seekers.
Oh, yes.
Which was pretty freaking funny. Nick Frost plays such a great, like, just non-funny character that ends up being really funny, because it's like a certain type of humor where it's like the fact that he's so opposed to humor is what makes him funny.
Mm-hmm. I have not gotten to see it yet. I caught up on Mandalorian and then I haven't gotten to really watch anything because I've been a little bit busy. My youngest sister is going to hopefully get married in a few weeks here. We're kind of keeping our fingers crossed that everything is going to be okay. We were going to have some people come up from North Carolina to come visit us, and I'm afraid that right after I'm done recording this, I'm going to have to tell them that they cannot come up here.
Yeah, because legally.
Yeah. Speaking, looks like they changed the regulations again.
They did.
Yeah. Prohibiting people from coming up here if they don't really have to. And yeah, you know, it is what it is. We'll get through it.
Yeah,
we'll get through it. A couple COVID cases recently have come a little bit too close to home, and
yeah,
because my cousin already had it and got over it, so it's rough out there. And people are doing everything that they're supposed to be doing, you know. Like my cousin got it because he's a nurse, you know. It's not like it's not like he was out partying. I will say this, I did finally leave the house as far as to go do something.
You went axe throwing.
I did. I went axe throwing. I never thought that I'd have to like make it, this decision would be so difficult. It was like, oh my God, do we go? Do we not go? What are we doing? What are we not doing? There was a couple, by the time this airs, it'll be a couple weeks ago. But yes, Skaggies in Easton did a great job. Everybody was wearing masks. They had tons of hand sanitizer. They had everything you could possibly need. You were way more than 6 feet away from anybody else in the whole place. So it was very safe as far as that goes. And we all made sure not to touch anything. Your girl, I practiced, I think, about 8 times. And by the 9th time, I hit that 4. I was so close to getting right in the center. I was a little disappointed in myself, but And that thing was in there. I wish I had video of me trying to pull that freaking axe out, because I was like, holy shit, this ain't no joke. So I will be installing an axe throwing setup in my backyard out in the woods here, because that relieves so much tension. Oh my God, it was so great.
It sure does.
It's just great. I love axe throwing. Anybody who makes axes wants to sponsor us, I would love to do a commercial for handmade axes. Like, hell yeah, do it. Anyway,
if anyone wants to sponsor us, just hit us up. It doesn't even, you don't even need to make axes. I'll say that.
Oh man.
Plus, if you do, but yeah.
Part of me really wants to just keep it commercial free. I don't mind doing promos for other podcasts that we really enjoy. We'd like you guys to know about, but I'm almost like, oh, can we just not
I have an incredibly soul draining job right now that I need to leave, and I need to become a famous person on podcasting.
Kiki. Yeah, but we can do that through Patreon.
Never before have I needed to get out of the workforce as much as I do now.
It's even worse than the other job.
I mean, not physically, but like emotionally.
Oh, I'm sorry. That sucks.
I mean, it is what it is. It's a call center job.
Mm. Yuck.
I mean, it's inbound calls, so that's kind of nice, but like still.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I'm going to give a shout out to Two Rivers Brewery in Easton as well, because they, again, panic attack about going to a restaurant for the first time since February. They have private room. So it was a bachelorette party, but we got a private room. We did not have to go near anybody. Nothing. It was great. And the bathroom was basically ours. No.
No strippers?
No stripper. But I had a hamburger that had peanut butter on it.
Nice.
And it was amazing, since we're talking about food.
I mean, even if we're not talking about food, I demand you tell me about stuff like that.
Yeah. And they're papas fritas that are fried in duck fat. Yeah. Yeah, it's a I'm back on keto, and I did really, really good. I only tasted like one of them, but holy shit, I could eat all those fries. Every single last one of them. Axes, your job sucks. You watched a really good show that I have to watch.
Yeah, Truth Seekers.
Oh yeah, sorry. We wanted Cord to be here tonight, but
he's off playing D&D.
Got tied up with a D&D game, so
that's fine.
Yeah, bastard. I know he's highly disappointed, because I was like, I think we're going to talk about food. And he's like, damn it.
I love food.
I love food so much. Oh, boy. All right. So speaking of becoming famous and, you know, not having to work your job anymore, and me saying that I'd rather not have to do advertising on our show because it's just lame in a way for you guys to have to sit through, which is why I haven't monetized most of our new episodes. If you want to join the squad and help us out, go over to patreon.com. So I think you're going to have a lot more fun just doing that. And we've got $1, $3, and $5 tiers. And $1 gets you undying gratitude from us, access to our boober reels, and a shout out on the cast. $3 level is going to get you early access to our true crime side missions. I've already got number 2 up there because we just started that. And then exclusive access to my Kiki's Quirks things, which I'm doing a monthly deep dive into a topic that's usually magic, paranormal, or history of some kind. So I've got something cool working on right now for November. And the $5 level gets you access to monthly Discord chat, which may include special guests from previous shows, including over at Pot of Holding, which is currently on hold because people, lives, interviews didn't work out. Timing was off. It's fine. May just put that on hold until January. We'll see. You can feel free to email us on any questions or comments on any previous episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter, Instagram, at Mission Spooky. Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. Thank you for all of the great reviews we've already gotten so far. There's like 21 of them now. You guys are great. Also rate and review us on Podchaser. And Facebook is out there. We might kind of like not use that too much. So Instagram and Twitter is where it's at. Also, we have some awesome designs coming out. You guys have probably already seen our cute little #1 mascot, which is our little devil ghost that a friend of mine made, and we're going to be naming her. So as of when this airs, you're also going to get on Twitter, you're going to have the top 5 names. I think I can put 5 for a poll, and then you guys will just pick. You're going to get to choose. I'm going to take the top 5 names that I got from everybody because people were really cool. They gave us names on Instagram and Twitter. We also have something really, really cool coming up from our artist, Chris Stone. So I did promise you guys cannibal cows. What had happened was you're not only going to get a t-shirt for Cannibal Cows, which will probably drop December, but guys are going to get something cooler. There's three mascots, a drummer, a singer, and a guitarist. And we're going to let you name those three as well. And then Chris is going to do separate t-shirt designs for those three. He already has it worked out. We just need the names. And then there's also a really cool t-shirt that just says Cannibal Cows, the cow skull. It's fucking great.
Nice.
Love it. It's like retro 80s too. It's fucking awesome. Yeah, so we got some really cool stuff planned for that for December. And thank you to those people who've used our Redbubble store. Neat. We don't really make money on that, but it's cool because I love our designs. Apparently some of you like them too, so neato.
They are wonderful designs.
Yeah, yeah. And then kind of want to announce something, but I'm going to wait because we got into something that will be coming out in December as well. So we'll see. Probably next episode, I'm going to tell you guys exactly what that is. It's pretty neat. And it's going to put JC's face all over the place.
I'm excited about it. Whatever it is, I don't know, but I'm excited.
JC, your face is going to be in the hands of possibly 500 people. It's going to be great.
I'm pumped. I'm pretty sure I know what this is, and I'm excited for it.
Yes. I just have to actually do the thing that's required of me. It's been a rough week, okay? Oh, goodness. I think that's all the business that we have going on right now. December looks pretty cool. We have two episodes for you guys in December that are going to be, I think you're going to be a lot of fun if you like murder, death, and ghosts.
Which, hey, if you don't like those things,
you probably shouldn't be listening to it. This is the wrong podcast. Yeah, and then we have something special planned for you guys too, for both Christmas and New Year's. So you're going to get like four episodes technically next month. How exciting. My Kiki's Quirks. And then I still have to give you guys the one for November for our Patreon subscribers. Thank you guys so much. Still, you guys are the bomb. And everybody else, you just sign up for that $1 tier so that JC can, you know, quit his job.
Please. I'd love to be jobless. I mean, a professional podcaster.
Oh, gosh. All right.
Support my Redbubble habits, because like I'm constantly on Redbubble like, oh, I want to buy this.
Once we rename the ghosty, the little devil ghost, she'll go live too, but we have to name her first, so you guys got to work on that today. That's your homework for later on this evening. All right, so taking us out once again is Hauntress with their song The Task at Hand. As always, stay spooky and don't die, but if you do, contact us
via, if you could, some yodeling. I've been listening to yodels lately, and I'm pretty sure I'd respond to it. I don't know if I'd positively respond, but I definitely look at you like, what the fuck are you doing?